This is an audio summary of the book, The Case for the Moon. It also describes some key images in the book. This summary is provided so that you can quickly get an understanding of what is in this book. Visit moonbook.space to download the full audio or print books. Front cover. The image of the cover is of a lunar landscape with the Earth just above the horizon. The title words, The Case for the Moon, are in large white letters. Subtitle A, Practical Plan for Establishing Humanity's First Permanent Foothold Beyond Earth, by Doug Plata, MD, MPH, President and Founder of the Space Development Network. The title page. This page has a column of QR codes on the left and several URL addresses for each item. Items include a free downloadable .pdf of the book, which can be shared with anyone, an audiobook, either by chapter or the entire book, summaries, whether .pdf or by audio. Order paperback at $30 each or $120 for a box of five. Donate. Any donation over $15 will go towards free distributions, including SEDS clubs. Famous quotes page. If God wanted man to become a space-faring species, he would have given man a moon. Kraft Arnold Erica. The Earth is the cradle of humanity, but one cannot live in the cradle forever. Konstantin Tsiolkovsky. The moon is not simply an object of scientific curiosity. It is the nearest place in space where we can learn to live and work productively away from Earth. Paul Spoutis. Foreword. The author, Dr. Doug Plata, succinctly lays out the purpose of this book, which is to show policymakers what is possible, especially given the near-term likelihood of the Starship fleet of reusable rockets. This capability represents an opportunity to establish humanity's first permanent foothold in the form of an initial permanent crew. This could be followed by an extensive international lunar exploration phase involving most nations of the world. Some would choose to remain behind on the moon in a large and growing international lunar base. As the flight rate goes up and competing companies provide goods and services, then wealthy private individuals could begin to grow the base, resulting in true settlement. The upcoming generations will be truly inspired by these developments. But lunar development does require government funding, which means that we dare not be caught in policy traps, where budgets are used for decades on programs that don't take full advantage of the reusable fleets. Acronyms. There is a list of 40 acronyms and terms with one-line explanations. Table of contents, over two pages, 42, yes. 42 chapters are organized into 12 major sections. Those sections include introduction, transportation, infrastructure, phases of development, habitats, living on the moon, crew health, working on the moon, funding lunar development, space policy, how to get involved, and addendum. Book section number one, introduction. Chapter one, introduction and the innovative plan. In this chapter, the purpose of the book is explained in detail. It is for both space policymakers to see what is possible, assuming the Starship fleet, and also it is a book to help space advocates understand how they can work together to help move this vision forward. The innovative plan that takes full advantage of the reusable fleet is placed in contrast to the government's traditional plan, which focuses on a few government astronauts repeating the geology expeditions of the Apollo program. Emphasis is given to how the innovative plan is realistic based upon current engine production rates, development progress, and near-term challenges to be overcome. Finally, a cost estimate is given of the competing plans. Chapter 2. Why the Moon? This chapter contains five infographics with a paragraph explaining each one. These are the main arguments for why the Moon has large advantages compared to other destinations, including low Earth orbit, otherwise known as LEO, and Mars. The first infographic shows that the round-trip time to the Moon is about 1/70th shorter than the travel time to Mars. This means that any base or settlement on the Moon will grow far faster than one on Mars. The second infographic shows that communication times to the Moon is only 2.6 seconds, whereas the average time for Mars is 1,500 seconds. So, moving to Mars would require cutting real-time ties with friends and family, whereas people living on the Moon will be able to be telepresent at family gatherings on Earth. The third infographic shows that travel times are likewise much longer for Mars than the Moon. This means that each ticket to Mars will be more expensive than going to the Moon, making it impossible for some to go to Mars. Also, one will have to give up 6 months of one's life just traveling to Mars. The fourth infographic surprisingly shows that the radiation exposure during the first year is far less for the Moon compared with low Earth orbit and Mars. This is because it is only a three-day trip to the Moon before going into a shielded habitat. However, for both Leo and Mars, one is exposed to space radiation for months. The fifth infographic shows that Leo has no immediate resources. Whereas Mars has more resources than the Moon, the graphic shows that the Moon has about 1,600 years worth of water for a settlement 1 million strong. This is far more than enough time for systems to be developed to import volatiles, so the Moon will never run out of resources. Arguments for a policy of lunar development include 1. Because it can be done soon. 2. Because the cost is reasonable. 3. Because Elon won't pay for it, so the government needs to. 4. Because of the historic opportunity. 5. Because it will be inspiring. 6. Because America can lead the way. 7. Because the Moon has abundance. And finally, 8. Because the largest settlement will be there. Chapter 3. What about Mars? Like the Moon, Mars is a legitimate destination in its own right. Given that the Starship is specifically designed for Mars and SpaceX has the Starlink revenue to fund Mars development, Moon and Mars development will occur simultaneously. But because of the much greater distance, Mars will be developed much more slowly. Mars's greater resources itself is not a big argument in its favor because the Moon has more than enough resources. But the ease of accessibility of its volatiles is a definite plus. But once ice harvesting operations have been set up on the Moon, the production of the next increment of volatiles will be fairly cheap. Chapter 4. Why now and how soon? Starship development is moving along nicely. Full reusability of heavy lift vehicles is a complete game changer. And not only this, but both SpaceX and Blue Origin have the factories to produce fleets of reusable ships. We need space policy to take full advantage of this capability. This chapter makes the case that landing cargo on the Moon will start occurring about 2027, and when successful, crew will start landing in about 2028. Attempts to land cargo on Mars will occur about simultaneously, with crew on Mars occurring somewhat after the Moon. We should aim for an initial permanent crew about 2030. Buildup of an international lunar base will occur starting in the early 2030s, with a transition to a private settlement being in the late 2030s. A large international lunar exploration phase will occur in the mid to late 2000s and 30s. Populations of ethnic/national and religious groups will become large enough by the end of the 2000s and 30s, such that the 2000s and 40s will witness the establishment of people-specific colonies. Chapter 5. A turning point in human history. This chapter makes the case that a permanent lunar base represents a transition point in human history. Starting with the initial permanent crew, humanity will start to spread beyond Earth first with the permanent bases on the Moon and Mars. We will know that we are watching history being made. One of the images shows is an aerial view of the Starship factory in Boca Chica, Texas, where a fleet of reusable super heavy lift rockets are being produced. Book section number 2, Transportation. Chapter 6, The Starship Fleet. The focus on this book is the fleet of fully reusable starships. Because its development is so much in the public's eye, it is currently the best example of how very large-scale development will occur on the Moon. The evidence is clear that a fleet of Starship is practically inevitable. Cheap access to space really is the game changer it has always promised to be. Chapter 7. The Lunar Ferry and Spaceports. Let's not ignore the reusable vehicles that Blue Origin is specifically developing. Although its Blue Moon Mark II lander doesn't deliver the cargo mass anywhere close to SpaceX's Lunar Starship, with on-orbit refilling and sourcing its propellant from the Moon, Blue Origin can establish a lunar ferry, greatly reducing the number of refillings required in LEO. Chapter 8, Logistics and Surface Transport. In this chapter, a comprehensive system of modular surface vehicles is described for just about every application needed. Also described as an end-to-end logistics transport system that is largely automated and launcher/lander agnostic. A modified image is shown of a Starship having landed, but where it is modified to carry a cylindrical shipping container, which is showed being lowered to the ground onto surface vehicles. Another image shows an electric chassis onto which can go crew or cargo modules and to which tractor implements could be attached. Book section number 3, Infrastructure. Chapter 9, Power systems such as solar drapes. This chapter discusses solar and nuclear power on the moon. It highlights the solar drapes concept, which uses the maximum Starship payload capacity to deliver a whole array of thin film photovoltaic drapes suspended by a line of telescoping poles. In this way, an average of 5.1 megawatts is produced from a single payload delivery. This is industrial scale power, providing enough for any of the following: ongoing food for 230 people, or 37 tons of propellant per day, or 29 tons of iron per day, or 8 tons of aluminum per day. These high-power products would be produced at the poles and the results shipped overland within 3 days to anywhere else on the moon. Nuclear power would be useful during brief times of shading or during the long nights away from the poles. A full-page image of a scientific poster is shown, which describes the solar drapes concept, its deployment, and how the power could be used. An image is included of the 30-meter-tall drapes with intermittent telescoping poles. Chapter 10, Lunar Roads. This chapter describes how long-distance roads could be established early on by simply robotically smoothing and compacting the lunar dirt. Self-driving cargo and crew vehicles would need periodic way stations / motels where cargo and crew modules could slide from a depleted electric chassis to a fully charged one. Crew vehicles would need to carry their own water shielding to protect against radiation. One image shows two automated rovers with tractor implements filling in a crater with a steamroller following. Another image is a map of the moon with proposed roads connecting key sites on the moon, such as the Apollo landing sites. Chapter 11, The Role of Robots. An AI humanoid robot could be a member of initial permanent crew, conducting useful tasks 24/7. Other dexterous robots would plant, harvest, process, and maintain the greenhouse areas. They could also continuously clean and maintain facilities. Indeed, robots would probably outnumber human crew at every level of development. One image shows the ice harvester vehicle scooping up lunar dirt to be placed within its body to steam out the volatiles into containers attached to each side of the vehicle. Another image shows the dexterous robot, or Dexbot, with four wheels and the body, head, and arms attached to the chassis. Book section number 4, Phases of Development. Chapter 12, The Initial Permanent Crew. This chapter describes a scenario of the first permanent crew to settle down on the moon. Ideally, these would be four couples without children back on Earth, and so free to sell their homes on Earth and move indefinitely to the moon. In other words, they are the first humans to begin spreading beyond Earth, true settlers. Their jobs, hypothetical national origins, languages, and talents are described. If chosen well, the crew of eight should be able to speak to at least 75% of the world in a language that they would be able to understand. An image of eight members of the initial permanent crew is shown, including the jobs for each. Also, a map is shown of the nations of the Earth, with each nation color-coded into English and one of eight language categories for each crew member. Chapter 13, The International Lunar Exploration Phase. In our scenario, immediately following the initial crew phase, lasting between 6 and 12 months, a large phase of international exploration would commence. A follow-on agreement to the Artemis Accords would coordinate the participating nations so that their astronauts would each have newsworthy missions. This would be a huge foreign policy achievement for the United States, naturally leading to the establishment of an international lunar base. Chapter 14, The International Lunar Base. During the initial crew phase, cargo landers would deliver components of the International Lunar Base. As international astronauts explore the moon, many of them will remain behind in a growing international base to represent their nations. Besides continuing to explore, they will also work to set up the international base and develop ISRU to make the base increasingly Earth-independent. The international base may have three internal time zones to keep the residents roughly in touch with their home countries. English will likely be the common second language. A map of the Earth is shown with three red vertical bars, showing the three identified time zones. Chapter 15, Private Settlement Phase. As described in the introduction chapter, competing companies would first serve governments in the international base and then be naturally positioned to serve private settlers as the base expands into a settlement. People from certain wealthy nations will be overrepresented, and they will likely cluster in parts of the international base until they become numerous enough to consider branching off into their own colony. Chapter 16, From Base to Lunar Countries. Looking out to the 2040s, we can anticipate that as people groups start setting up their own colonies, thoughts will naturally start moving toward the idea of self-governance. To prevent future border conflicts, inspiration can be drawn from the Northwest Ordinance Act to pre-drawn borders and set criteria for a vote of independence after reaching a certain population size. It is unlikely that anyone on Earth will take physical action to stop self-governance, and so it will happen. Book section number 5, Habitats. Chapter 17, Starhab. The concept of Starhab is of a starship landing on its tail and then tilted over using tethers onto a large inflatable pillow. This concept is proposed as a simple way of establishing the first permanent habitat on the moon for the initial permanent crew. The crew would land separately, enter, clear the propellant tanks, and then cut doorways through the methane tank. Using pre-welded attachment points, they would move floor sections, walks, doors, furniture, and equipment from the payload bay throughout the rest of the Starhab. The end result would be a habitat with 2.5 times more volume than the ISS. All of the electrical and electronic parts of Starhab would be thoroughly networked. This chapter goes into what each section of the Starhab would contain. The chapter shows renderings, including cutouts of the Starhab and how it would be horizontalized. Chapter 18, The Instabase Concept. The Instabase concept is simply an initial base composed of inflatable modules all connected together. As a compacted payload, it would be lowered from a starship to a vehicle that would transport it to a robotically prepared site. Setting it up would be a simple matter of inflating it with condensed air. The Instabase would be either an alternate to Starhab or an intermediate phase between Starhab and the International Lunar Base. SpaceX has rendered an inflatable base looking very much like the Instabase. Images in the chapter include a CGI rendering of Instabase, as well as the full-scale mock-up produced by the Space Development Network. Chapter 19, Specialty Habs. The most logical form of habitat for the International Lunar Base would be the largest possible inflatable habitat that could fit as a payload in the Starship. At 100 tons, it would be something like a very large square air mattress of about 70 meters on a side and 3 floors in height. Its double walls would be filled with regolith shielding. To give some perspective on its size, that floor space is the equivalent of 69 average American homes. Countries and companies could choose which specialty hab they wanted to design. That could be their contribution to the International Lunar Base. A remarkable AI image shows of a very large 100-ton inflatable habitat on the moon. Being delivered as only a single Starship payload, it is obvious that a very large international base could be set up very quickly. Book section number 6, Living on the Moon. Chapter 20, Watching History Happen. This chapter points out that the first private crew to settle down off Earth will be historically significant. We can choose to knowingly write that chapter in history and make it an interesting story that parents in the future will want to tell their children. Private individuals starting to spread beyond Earth is at least as historically significant as Plymouth Rock is to the American story. And with the initial crew being so connected to all parts of the world through their languages, it won't just represent Americans spreading beyond Earth, but, indeed, all of humanity. Chapter 21, Cooking and the Culinary Arts. The network's food working group has developed a plan for how produce from the GreenHab would be converted into ingredients used in recipes to make meals that would meet the nutritional needs of the crew. It is an interesting challenge to produce the right amount of produce at the right time so that food storage is minimized. Automated/robotic systems would be used to free up valuable crew time. Cooking and the enjoyment of regular and special meals will play an important role in crew morale and interest by many in the watching public. Chapter 22, Dance, Celebrations, and More. As the initial permanent crew settles down into their StarHab, they would not only be working but living life. Aspects of living not normally associated with life on a space station, such as the arts, would now be just a normal part of life. This chapter describes some of the interesting things that the initial crew could do. In particular, dance in the moon's 1/6 gravity without be a remarkable thing. Dancers could use all walls, and even the ceiling as part of their routine. Even the choreography with music would be different. And AI images show 6 astronauts sitting on the lunar surface in what looks like lawn chairs, looking towards the Earth on the horizon. Also on the horizon are fireworks going off as they celebrate the 4th. Book section number 7, Crew Health. Chapter 23, Space Radiation. Space radiation comes in a few different forms. Of greatest concern are the solar events like solar flares and galactic cosmic rays, known as GCRs. The equivalent of 20 centimeters thick of water shielding is sufficient to protect against the short-term death that a very bad solar flare can cause. That an odd of shielding can reduce the GCR radiation exposure by about 40%, thereby giving crew about 6 years before they reach their career limit. Add more lunar dirt to the thickness of the habitat, and you buy the crew even more time. Crew driving in vehicles will want to carry their solar particle event shielding with them. This chapter includes a chart showing how many years until the crew reach their career limits, given different levels of shielding. Chapter 24, Artificial Gravity. Reduced gravity causes different problems with different organ systems requiring different levels of artificial gravity and exercise regimens. An indoor centrifuge is designed into certain habitats to help extend crew stay and to use to determine the artificial gravity prescription for healthy gestation and childhood. The centrifuge doesn't need to be huge so long as crew don't move their heads while inside and spinning. A 3D image is shown of a cutaway of the SpinHab with astronauts standing while being spun around. The chapter also includes a web address to a scientific paper by the author, showing how biomedical indicators could be used to determine when crew would need to return. Chapter 25, Dust Mitigation. The best way to deal with dust is to simply avoid it. This chapter describes several easy ways of doing that. These methods include washing and crushing rocks for agriculture instead of bringing in toxic dirt. Crew could either remain in the rovers while on an expedition or wear flexible coveralls to keep dust off their suits. An image is a show of a starship having landed on the center of a ceramic tarp, surrounded by a much larger, thin white tarp, over a berm at the periphery. Chapter 26, Psychology. Most space advocates err because they talk as though all astronauts will have to bear with very confined spaces, basically driving them crazy. Starships and very large habitats will prevent that issue from being a problem. Rather, the psychological issues of concern will be crew cohesion related to personality conflicts within the teams, marital issues, and private individuals bringing their pathologies with them. Ways of preventing these problems from arising are discussed. Chapter 27, Lunar Healthcare System. Initial crew will be selected for peak health, and so the healthcare system will focus on potential emergencies. But as older private settlers arrive, a broader set of healthcare services will be necessary. The key will be to anticipate the need beforehand, and then to push forward healthcare providers, facilities, equipment, and medications to ensure that all is available when needed. A well-organized healthcare system could not only ensure healthcare provision, but could proactively prevent dental medical, and psychological conditions. Public health approaches could also eliminate many infectious diseases from off-Earth settlements. An image is included of three retiree physicians. Book section number 8, Working on the Moon. Chapter 28, Lunar Resources. The moon has some unique resources worth noting. At the top of the list are the so-called polar peaks of eternal light and the permanently shadowed regions nearby, containing substantial quantities of volatiles. A small percentage of the lunar highland is unoxidized metals. Of particular interest are the results from NASA's 2009 L-CROSS mission, showing high concentrations of water and substantial amounts of carbon and nitrogen-containing chemicals. Total water could supply a water recycling settlement of 1 million people for 1,600 years. Chapter 29, Metallurgy and Machining. This chapter describes the extraction of unoxidized metals and how oxidized metals from certain rocks can be extracted while producing oxygen. Given the magnitude of power expected from solar drapes, we can expect industrial quantities of metals to be produced fairly early on. Chapter 30, Chemistry. Sure, the moon has the elements needed to support settlement, but are they in their right chemical form? Unfortunately, no. So there are organic and inorganic chemical processes that need to be done to transform them into the most useful chemical forms. This chapter has several diagrams showing the elemental composition of certain resources and the stoichiometric conversion of chemicals into other types of chemicals. One surprising image is of an astronaut standing next to a set of cubes representing the chemical composition of the icy dirt analyzed in NASA's 2009 L-CROSS mission. The cubes are remarkable because they clearly illustrate the large amount of water and organic chemicals within those results. Chapter 31, Growing Food. We can't ship food forever. Eventually, we'll need to grow our own food. This chapter goes into detail about greenhouse designs and the choices that our working group made when designing the lunar greenhouses. In a nutshell, they would be very large, multi-floor, shielded inflatables using optimized LED lighting and a hybrid gravel hydroponic approach, completely avoiding the lunar dust. Book section number 9, Funding Lunar Development. Chapter 32, Funding Lunar Development. Financing lunar development includes reducing expenses, of which cheap access to space is the most important. Fixed price contracting, recycling, and ISRU can all help. Funding will likely start with NASA-led public-private partnerships, PPPs. As prices go down, the savings of private individuals will be a major source of funding. Resource-based export income, for example, propellant from ICE, HE3 PGMs, will be a difficult business case. Rather, government budgets and private savings will likely dominate funding for the foreseeable future. One image in the chapter is of a pie chart, showing that about 80% of wealthy settlers would likely come from the English-speaking countries, China, Europe, and Japan. Another image comes from a presentation by Elon Musk, showing that settlers will come from the intersection of those who want to go and those who can afford to go. Book section number 10, Space Policy. Chapter 33, The Impact of New Capabilities. As fleets of reusable heavy lift vehicles become available, space policy will need to fundamentally change to take full advantage of this new capability. Given the likely ability to transport large cargo and crew, time is running out for countries to fund their companies to develop competing surface systems, such as specialty HAZ, surface transport vehicles, life support, agriculture, etc. Chapter 34, Legacy and Leadership. The innovative plan presents a unique opportunity for America to lead the countries of the world as humanity starts spreading beyond Earth. The Artemis Accords are excellent, but need to be followed on with coordinating agreements for an international lunar exploration phase and base. The initial permanent crew scenario provides a remarkable, unique opportunity to seize a historic prize that will inspire the world for generations. The main criterion for identifying the value of the moon is the foreign policy achievements. Chapter 35. Is space policy becoming irrelevant? Starlink revenue is now exceeding NASA human spaceflight budget. Given the much greater cost-effectiveness of private launch systems, one must start wondering if NASA will remain relevant when companies have the capability of accomplishing so much more with more money and capability. The chapter argues that space policymakers need to recognize that our programs need to align with the direction that the leading space launch companies are headed. Chapter 36, Space Policies We Need. This chapter succinctly identifies key space policies that will be needed to capitalize on the emerging capability of the reusable heavy lift vehicle fleets. It starts by identifying ship-to-ship propellant transfer, as when space policy needs to recognize that the new capabilities are going to become reality. We need to start developing large surface systems to be ready when heavy cargo is being delivered to the moon. We need to start soon inviting young people around the world to prepare themselves to be part of America's historic initial permanent crew. And we need to go beyond Artemis Accords to coordinate surface exploration and an international base with other nations. Chapter 37, Avoiding Policy Traps. This chapter identifies certain popular space policies that risk locking America into programs that will prevent NASA's budget from being able to take full advantage of the emerging capability presented by the reusable heavy lift fleets. There are certain programs that make no sense as the new capabilities become available. This includes Mobile Launcher 2, Gateway, Orion, and SLS. There is also the very real risk that NASA's HSF budget will be constrained for decades if we get locked into spending money utilizing the so-called commercial LEO stations. Decisions made now will determine if America can seize the remarkable opportunities described in this book. Chapter 38, The Challenge of China. Because so much anxiety is expressed about losing the moon to China, this chapter points out that, thanks mostly to the lead that the Starship fleet currently has, there is little basis for concern that China will be able to make a credible claim to anything on the moon. No one would accept any unreasonable claim, and the Starship fleet will overwhelm lunar development anyhow. Book section number 11, How to Get Involved. Chapter 39, Join the Space Development Network. This chapter is a call for those readers who would like to help realize the vision in this book to join the Space Development Network for free, specify their interests and talents, and then participate in Zoom working groups. Chapter 40, The Analog Visitor Center. One project that the network is working on would be the establishment of a new type of analog base that would be development rather than exploration-oriented, located in Florida near Kennedy Space Center. Book section number 12, Addendum. Chapter 41, Animals on the Moon. This chapter describes the different categories of animals that we can expect to bring to the moon. It starts with a female dog that will have the first off-Earth puppy. What joy! There will also be a set of experimental animals that will be used to determine the artificial gravity prescription for healthy gestation and childhood. Finally, as international astronauts start arriving, they can bring animals unique to their country to add to a growing zoo. Chapter 42, Preserving Artifacts and the Environment. Along with the roads chapter, this chapter discusses the need to preserve the lunar landscape by keeping vehicular tracks on roads. Also, new artifacts, such as the first exploratory footprints at unique sites, deserve to be preserved. How this can be done while allowing later tourist visits is discussed. Back cover. Image is of the lunar sky over light gray lunar hills at the bottom. Title, Why the Moon? The moon is no longer a distant symbol of exploration. It is a near-term strategic domain in which American leadership, or its absence, will shape the future of space. Four paragraphs describe how lunar development is a plausible near-term proposition, and that this book describes how it will be accomplished. At the bottom is a portrait of the author with the briefest of bios.